And now, the Corner Office. Political press attaché Joe Dellerone gets in-depth on the issues with Grand Chief Joe Tequiro Norton.
Well, it's been a while, but it's time once again to talk to Grand Chief Joseph Tequiro Norton in our edition of the Corner Office. Welcome, Tequiro. We haven't done this for a while. It's been, and I guess for the right reasons politically, because it's been incredibly busy. I've said this before, and this program's not about me, but in my 17 years here, I've never seen it so busy, mm-hmm. and so we haven't had a chance to actually sit like this and talk for a bit. So what's been keeping you the busiest right now?
Well, I would say on two fronts, economic development issues, and then also the political scene, Canada and Quebec. In those two sectors, there's been a lot of matters that have come up, a lot of opportunity. And when I look at it from that point of view, there's positiveness that's been happening. And then a little bit of outside of that is the stuff that's been going on in Montreal, 375 anniversary of the city, and things that have been going on there. It's not necessarily a celebration for Ganawage, but it's a unique opportunity for us Ganawage to remind people generally right across the board that that's our territory.
I noticed that when the mayor has spoken, and we've been at the same a couple of events, one with the totem pole ceremony, and then the big luncheon the other day, and the mayor is taking great pains to talk about reconciliation and doing things, and there are people who are saying, well, you know what, big deal, or yeah, right, but we've never had, in my recollection, any politician mm-hmm. going as far as this mayor is, almost taking a chance in saying, I'm putting it out there for to do some sort of reconciliation. And it's not just to us. There's that park in Montreal yes. that they dedicated. They put some services in there. What's your take on it?
Well, I think from a personal point of view, the mayor, Mayor Cordero, I've known him for many years, okay, when he was a member of parliament. And he's in recent months, he's basically said, you know, he led the way in terms of the official apology from Canada to Indigenous people going way back when, you know, I've known him for at least 20 years, if not longer than that. And he's always been in the forefront of things. He's brought that attitude from a federal government minister portfolio to the mayor of Montreal, to the municipal scene. And it's not surprising, and it's refreshing to hear. So there is, without a question, a benefit of a doubt. You have to give that, you know, he's very sincere in the things that he says, and trying to improve and trying to make things a lot better in recognition of Indigenous people, you know. So for me, it is a unique opportunity to step forward and be a part of that. In other words, it's not just reconciliation, you know, in words and apologies. It's actual doing things, making things happen.
Well, you know, and in that case, you know, when you were at the luncheon, you were sitting with some pretty powerful people. You yes. sat right next to the heritage minister who was here yep. last year, and we're looking towards, you know, a big project that we've sort of only semi-announced several times, talking about the possibility of a theater/cultural center, and she is the person who's going to make that happen and is really helpful. You also sat at the same table with the mayor and the premier and the Native Affairs minister, so yeah. it was a good opportunity.
Well, I just want to take note about what you just said about the Minister of Heritage, Melanie Joly, and the proposal. It's more than just a dream now. It's, you know, we're getting it off the ground, and we should see perhaps maybe by, you know, rough guess, 2020, a brand new spanking building in the community that will house all kinds of activities, including a theater, a museum, a cultural center, and a number of other much-needed office space for various activities in the community.
So it's nice to see some good things happening.
Yeah. So the other part of what you just said was sitting there with those people, you know, the premier and others, and hearing them speak highly about, you know, because that was an Indigenous dinner or luncheon, as they were calling it, that we were invited to. And so it was good to see that people came there. You know, the Minister of Finance was there, the Minister of Public Security, cabinet ministers, you know. So you see the interest, you see the willingness to mix it up, if you will, with Indigenous people. So it was a good opportunity to have good discussion. So it wasn't just the idea of Montreal's 375th birthday. It was the opportunity to talk to these people one-on-one.
Maybe it was the birth of a better relationship.
I certainly hope so.
Well, you know, you talk about relationships, and it's been, you know, we've had some success, we've had some problems. One of the big events that was announced just recently on a Sunday morning was the Mercier Bridge and the project and how they're going to go about it. And I know, though, in that instance, also some nice words were spoken about our history and ironworking and bridges across North America. At the same time, there was some concern that you raised about this whole project and how it seems to be rolling out.
Yeah, well, it was that was on a Sunday morning, and the couple of days before that, on Friday, we were advised about that, you know, there was going to be this press conference. We were invited to it, you know, to participate, it caught us off guard a bit, because we said, well, details, you know, give us some details, and nobody had details. Even at the Sunday morning press conference, there was very little detail. There was all sort of, well, it might be this, it might be that, it might be 100 million, it might be 300 million, it might be in a year, 2 years, 3 years, we're not sure, you know. And then how that's going to work, how that's going to happen, what, where, and when. We were given no information on that. And, you know, for whatever reason, you had the minister, the regional minister in this district over here for the province, Pierre Moreau, I believe. Then you had the Minister of Native Affairs, Jeff Kelly. They did all the talking. And for whatever reason, they didn't allow me to speak. Or I wasn't asked to, let's put it that way. And I said, okay, I don't mind. I'm going to get my chance. And when I went on one after that, when the individual
media outlets,
the reporters started talking to me, I made it clear, you know, I said, this is fine and well, grand announcement, but I said, I want to make it clear that without our support, our direct involvement in everything, this project will not go. You know, I want to make that point. I want to make it clear. And I want people to understand and realize that it's true. If we do not actively, if we're not actually involved in the planning, you know, and all of that, all the kinds of things that go with something like that, because it's one thing to come up with a plan for a bridge, you know, specs and all that. It's another thing, all the planning around it that take place, even to the degree of perhaps funding such an operation, you know, funding such a project, which is a possibility on our part. Not that the MCK has that kind of money, but there are others who may be interested in partnering with us to do that sort of thing, you know.
Well, if you look at the original announcement several years ago now, when the federal side of the bridge, which is on our side, the repairs went in there, and that's exactly what happened when you had a consortium of businesses locally who took it upon themselves to bid, and there was a lot of political give and take, and I think people forget about the fact that it didn't just happen. There was a lot of work that went on behind the scenes, and now you go into the Quebec side, and they may not seem to have the same sense of urgency in terms of sitting together and saying, well, let's get this done. So I guess your job really is to make sure they don't forget that.
I'm glad you touched on, you know, on the federal side, the work that was done there in the formation of the Mohawk Bridge Consortium. You know, whether people acknowledge it or no or not, I had a lot to do with that. I was out of office at the time. I had retired. But then, you know, fortunately, I was given a contract with the Canada Bridge Corporation to help put that together, you know, for the Bridge Corporation to have, so that there would be exclusivity to Mohawks, nobody else. So I sat and, you know, for a couple of years, I helped work on that, just as the same thing in Akwesasne. The bridge over there, I did a lot of work on the low-level bridge, bringing the people together, you know, and making sure that it was strictly Mohawk oriented in one way or another. So the experience is there, the knowledge is there. It's now a question of just transferring it from what we did before to this new proposal.
And of course, there's some different challenges. And I'm telling you, the Sunday morning event, the press conference itself, was fun to watch because you had the mayors of some of our neighboring mayors yeah. were there, including Natalie Simon, yeah. who seemed very reluctant to come over and kind of hello Chief Norton, and boom, she was out of there. But you know, to see that all unfolding, because we used to have a relationship with Pierre Moreau. I remember Mike O'Brien had many meetings. At one point, yeah. he had something like 26 meetings in a row. And then he disappeared. And this was before his illness. You know, and you don't wish anybody ill, and I'm glad he's back in good health. But he had disappeared, and we couldn't find him for a long time. And now, you know, kind of this is his yeah. Reappearance. And have there been any discussions or anything like that since that press conference a month
no,
ago?
No. I mean, when I came on the scene almost 2 years ago after being elected Grand Chief, that was the discussion then that, you know, and I was given the background on the, and that was referring to the, excuse me, that's referring to the, the lawsuit by the MRC against the Quebec government, you know, for the transfers of land, and it was said then that, you know, the last time they had seen him was the previous year in August of 2014, I guess it would
yes,
be.
Yes, yes.
And that's the last time they saw him. Last time he was ever involved in anything, and where he was, nobody knew. And
well, I remember quite often the attempts to reach and like no response. And I remember at one point there was thought of using the billboard and putting up a milk carton and saying, "Have you seen this man?" Because it was yeah. that concerning. Yeah. But it's really been a political game you see going on, because he's also the representative for the Roussillon.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he's kind of battling the mayors who are suing Quebec, yet at the same time he has to represent their interests. So you know he's got to tiptoe very yeah, carefully. In the meantime, we're watching this happen in court, and we're making presentations, because this is all affecting us greatly more than anyone else.
I would say, from a personal point of view, the man is in conflict of interest. You know, he can't represent a certain group, if you will, while they're suing your government, you know, so you can't do stuff like that. And it's been my own perception. I've not hidden the fact. I think there was a conspiracy that has gone on between him and the Roussillon and their lawsuit. You know, I don't mind saying that one.
We never really got into any kind of depth about this exact topic, because if you recall, you know, we had been concerned about this and had some ideas that maybe some shenanigans were going on. And lo and behold, Quebec did come out with some legislation, planned legislation, to create an economic yeah. corridor on the A30, just at that time when we couldn't get hold.
And he's the one that tabled it. Okay. So, you know, you don't have to be a genius to realize that he has a lot to do with what's taking place, you know. And if it can ever be proven that he's done that, then, you know, we'll go. That goes a long way to say that, you know, there's conspiracy within the government of Quebec towards Mohawks.
Well, it leads us to, you know, to that, getting right down to the court case. I know you were in court to watch some of the yeah. testimony that happened. And the consensus seems to be, from whatever sources that we're hearing from, aside from our own chiefs who went to see, to witness it, but people are saying that the mayors really don't seem to have a leg to stand on. And it's just kind of wasting everyone's time and delaying the inevitable, which is, you know, causing, has been the biggest problem for Caughnawaga.
Well, I think what, you know, there's several trains of thought on that. I think what has transpired is this whole attempt to prevent Caughnawaga from developing in that corridor, okay, on the 500 acres or 700 acres that were supposed to be returned. On the other hand, the mayors in that locale also figured, you know, they'd pass their bill in the National Assembly, converting the area around Highway 30, the scenery, from agricultural to commercial, and then begin developing. But nothing has materialized. As a matter of fact, anything that they've tried to do so far hasn't really worked out. My understanding is, you know, in the Chateauguay area, the businesses that developed in just a few short years are closing down. Now, they'll probably blame us for it, find a reason to say that. But, and we lost out too. Let's not kid ourselves. We lost out on opportunities that that we're still suffering for.
There were a couple of big ones, and I know we hadn't said too much, but it kind of slipped out somewhere in public. I saw it in print somewhere about one of the projects that had come. It was Costco.
Yes.
They were looking for a distribution center. There is really very little in the region, and they approached Caughnawaga saying, look, we're looking for X amount of acres. It wouldn't have taken 500 acres.
No, definitely not.
But it would have allowed for some great economic development and some jobs and some rent and all of this stuff. But that fell by the wayside. And I guess what's most disconcerting is when you hear the mayor of Chateauguay especially talking about, well, the Mohawks have an unfair advantage after how many years of having no advantage.
Well, it's strange and unusual to hear that, because that says that there's a very little depth in terms of understanding maybe the political and the economic, you know, situation with Caughnawaga. In turn, you know, she doesn't mention, nor does she acknowledges that we spend on her about $60 million a year, you know? And it's like as if that doesn't mean nothing, you know. It's and all of that is they're entitled to it. In other words, that's what really bothers me, you know. And at one point, if you recall, I called for a boycott, which was put in place, and then people, of course, in the community, for and against and whatever else, and eventually we lifted it. But there was some success as far as I know, in terms of the boycott having its effect. It's not a nice thing to do, but it was to send a clear message, you know. You people, you voted that person in. Get them out of there, you know, because they're not doing anything to create a good relationship between our respective parties.
Well, no doubt about that. It's been problematic for a long time. She's made no bones about it, yeah. And now they're having a difficult time. It's always better to be good neighbors, but you've also been quoted as saying, well, those are our neighbors, but they're not our friends. You're talking about the four mayors.
Yeah, you can't choose who your neighbors are, but you can choose your friends.
Well, what a difference when you have the mayor of Montreal, who's a close neighbor, yeah. And you know, and saying let's find a way, and you know, an opposite of that is what you see here. And you mentioned the seigneury, which is something that I guess some people don't understand, because it's like, you know, I've heard people say they should just put an injunction on everything and stop everything. But the problem with the seigneury negotiations is once you throw it into court, they can back right out. This is Canada, mm-hmm. at this point, and just say, well, everything, it's notwithstanding. And if it goes to court, then we don't agree to anything, and you got to prove your case.
Well, you're correct, you know, to a certain extent. I mean, again, we're not lawyers, you and I, so we can only surmise in terms of what we understand that's sitting there in front of us. Canada has accepted the fact that Ganawage has a strong case, a strong grievance against Canada for what's happened, and that we do indeed have an interest in the territory. Now, what that is, what it's going to turn out to be, what have you, if it turns into a legal issue, they can't back away. They can't simply back away from it, you know. But that does create problems if you take a legal position and you go after them and you say, we're going to sue you. You know, you have to calculate, you know, and make sure that what you're going to do is not going to hurt the overall process. If after the legal process has gone ahead and whatever else, what comes out the other end now is, you know, what do you do now, whether successful or not? Canada still has an obligation, a constitutional obligation, to settle that matter. And in the meantime, you know, what does that do to prevent? Does it prevent, you know, the development of that area, the scenery, by, you know, the people, the very people who claim ownership right now? You know, if there's a legal battle, does it stop them? Or does it put us in a position where we are legally prevented from saying anything because, you know, others want to develop it? Supposing that bill that was the draft bill that was forwarded in the National Assembly, supposing they push it and they go for it, it's going to be a year now, I think, since that took place. And it does become a reality on their part, you know. Are we in a position not to be able to defend it because we're in court? So you have to be very careful about
that. Well, we certainly can make comments about it.
Oh, yeah, we can, definitely.
And that sometimes has just as important an effect. And it also lets not only the politicians out there, but it lets our own people know what the battles are and how we're fighting them.
And we don't often understand or know what our strengths are. And we do. We have a lot of power in terms of being able to create circumstances and situations in this region over here, and I hate to use the term, but I've used it very often, that destabilize. You know, it has effects on us, but it also, the broader picture is, we can destabilize the region to the effect that international, North America, Canada-wide investment, the need for the province and this region to attract investment we can harm it. We can be very harmful towards that. Now, do we want to do that? Because in a sense, we'll be harming ourselves. But on the other hand, what do we do when we're faced with what might seem to be insurmountable odds against us? So you have to go back to, well, what are your strengths? What do you think you can do? And then you calculate and you move forward and you use those strengths. It might be that, because don't forget, we have highways and all that kind of stuff coming through here too. The demand for compensation for that might be very important in terms of saying, you want to continue to come through here, then you got to pay for it. You don't pay for it, then there's going to be limits about how you're going to come through our territory. You know, it doesn't mean we have to stop everything, but we certainly can create some very difficult situations.
You mentioned, you know, Canada has its obligations. It gives us an opportunity to talk a bit about Canada right now.
Because
there was an attempt recently to come up with a new way of dealing with the Ganawage-Canada relations. So where are we now in terms of that? Because there have been, again, many levels of frustration. And, you know, we've had this table now for 5 years or so about the for membership and lands.
Yep.
And they've been sitting there and banging their heads and negotiating and push and pull. And sometimes it gets frustrating because it seems like, you know, you talk a lot, but you don't get a lot of action.
Well, first and foremost, the activity that's taking place in Ganawage if not equal, maybe more important than what's happening at the federal level and to some degree at the provincial level. Simply because what the community wants and demands and designs and develops in terms of laws and then policy, rules and regulations that go along with the law is what's going to dictate what's going to happen at the federal level. Now you take the issue of membership. Last night's discussion regarding residency, you know, removing residency from membership and allowing membership to stand on its own merits, and then allowing residency to be the enforcement part of it, you know, because that's what it is, and it's residency is based on the identity of who can be here in the law itself, you know. So we've taken upon ourselves to say, and the community has supported that. Now we go to Ottawa, and we sit there and we say, this is what the community has designed and developed, and we cannot alter that in any way, shape, or form. Now you, Canada, you have to find a way of recognizing what we're doing. Can't do that, then we don't have a deal, and then it simply disrupts all kinds of other things. It creates more problems for us. If they are of a mind that they want to find resolutions that are beyond the Indian Act, even to some degree that need the the decrees or whatever else of Parliament, then that's what they have to do. They have to go on their part to say, all right, this is how we're going to do it. And it flies in it's difficult because it flies in the face of the Charter of Rights and a number of other key pieces of legislation that are out there that all Canadians are entitled to. So we have to say, but we're not all Canadians.
And I think that goes to something that we forget once in a while is, you know, when you say, well, then we'll take it to court. Court's not always a good thing. Look what happened when with the gas retailers going to court and losing, and then going for appeal and losing again. So now you lose that wiggle room that we were able to work with before. And so, you know, you have to, I guess, people in the community, both business people and just people who are living their daily lives, need to have an understanding of why it's so important to come up with these type of things where the government then, like for example, with labor. I know there were some issues with it internally, but the fact is Quebec had to change its laws in order to accommodate Ganawage. They weren't accommodating Point Blue or Ganasadage or anybody else. It was Ganawage they were accommodating. They changed their laws. They had an order in council to do this and make adjustments. So it's not like it can't be done.
It can be done, and it's... We are, when I say we, the team, because we do have a KCR team that goes to the main table, and what we've said to them, you know, you guys got to be creative, you got to be courageous and creative is the theme of our table, and we're not going to do business as we did before. And they're saying, okay, we understand that, we agree with that. So let's build something new. Let's build something different that's out of the box, that goes beyond the standard. I mean, the standard is there's a certain way of looking at lands, meaning that it's the title is in the name of the crown. Well, you know what? Maybe this is time now for you to recognize that. And there are court cases that feed into this. It's time now to say that there's Aboriginal title. Okay.
The mayor of Montreal said, "Here we are sitting on unceded
land,
Mohawk territory."
And as far as I'm concerned, that means Aboriginal title to the land, okay, that underlies, you know, the federal government's position on lands, crown land, and then there's the provincial crown lands or provincial territories, then there's municipal, and we're somewhere on the bottom there, but that's good because now we're pushing our way up to the surface, and courts and these negotiations, if they bear fruit, will say very very clearly that there is Indigenous land, there is Mohawk territory underlying all of the layers that are on top of us, you know.
Well, you can tell how busy we are when we didn't even talk about some of the things that would have been the only thing we talked about in the past, such as the issue of the proposal to bring a casino to Ganawage, a privately owned casino. And that's not even creating the buzz that I thought it would in the community, and probably because there's just so many things going on that you feel like kind of a juggler.
In the political scene, there is the issue of membership and lands. That's my priority. We have to take care of that. That's all part of governance. if we have that identified and we have the federal government agreeing and acknowledging that we are responsible for that, not them any longer, you know, with membership, and then we have lands that we are responsible for. It is our land. We have title to it, you know, or maybe vested in the Mohawk Nation as a whole, but Ganawaga sits on Mohawk Nation territory. So does Montreal, okay, and the surrounding area. So if we, in my lifetime, if put it that way, if we're able to solidify that, then we'll have done our job and have moved a long way and towards making sure that, you know, we're secure. People are secure, land is secure, you know. And then on top of that, if we have a good, solid economic base, casino could be one of those things, or whatever else that we develop along the way. Economics, you know, economic power is political power. We can do a lot, you know. So we've got to be able to acknowledge that there's those major issues that the MCK has to take care of. Yes, there's other issues that are there, everyday issues that are sometimes annoying, you know, really. But we can't always be concentrating on that.
Yeah, and really what happens in those instances is when it affects somebody personally, they tend to get really involved, and yep. And those are the things that tend to blow up, and then you got to stop everything, take care of that, patch that hole in the road, and then try and move on. So
that's why I'm hoping even when I'm no longer there as a council member, I'm hoping future potential people who run for office have that broad approach, looking at, you know, and not be there because they have a personal grudge or something, you know, they were denied something or something happened, because I've seen too much of that before in the past. I know it's not nice to be judging, leadership, but, you know, you got to really look at it for what it is.
And you don't have to mention any names.
No.
Because there've been hundreds at this point, yeah. Council members over the past few years, and all you have to do is say, did that person have, you know, were they acting as a statesman or a stateswoman, or did they just kind of, you know, have their own agenda?
Yeah.
So that's the nature of the beast. Tokwirdo, it has been a really, really interesting program here, and I know we could go on all day, and I think at this point, we really need to try and find a little time in the next couple of weeks and continue this conversation, because we haven't scratched the surface.
No.
Mm. Is there anything at this time as we leave that you really want to leave as a message to the community at this point?
Yeah, I mean, just to be very clear about, you know, and we've touched on this throughout the throughout this interview, is you've got major political issues that incorporate lands and membership and other related factors. That's one thing. Then you've got the other issues, which are everyday. They're administrative. They're under various projects and programs, and all of that. You know. And there's funds that come in for that, you know, that to take care of that. But there's a major, major picture here that we need to be aware of in terms of our own revenue generation to help the political, as well as, it's not necessary to put money in the pocket of the council. It's to have money there available for the community itself to do a number of key things that need to happen and to keep things ongoing, you know. Because the government of Canada certainly isn't going to be pouring money into the things that this community demand. They're not. They give you the basics. They give you some increases. But we also need to look at, there's a division here between appropriated funds, which come from Canada, and then revenue generation. So people have to be on the ball. People have to be supportive of revenue generating proposals that come forth. And it's not just community ownership, it's individuals too. Individual private business that we need to help out and sort out.
Well, they go hand in hand. If you have a healthy public sector and a healthy private sector,
yeah.
then you have a healthy community.
Yep.
So, all right. Well, it's been interesting. I'll say that. That's for sure. And I hope that you, the people listening in today, have a better idea of what's going on right now. Again, Joseph Tokwiru Norton, Grand Chief, our guest in the corner office. And again, we hope that the next time isn't going to be 3 or 4 months.
No, we'll do it a lot quicker.
All right. Niao koa.
This has been The Corner Office with political press attaché Joe Delarone and Grand Chief Joseph Tokwiru Norton.